Okay, welcome to another episode of Annotated 911. I'm Fradit, and I'm here with my co-host,
Gloria Spoon.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 7, Secrets.
Secrets.
What are your thoughts?
First off, I love this opening we get with Hen in the clinic, the spa.
Yeah. The spa and that's not a spa. It's totally not a spa.
It's not a spa. It's totally, yeah, this is totally medical care. But I love right off the bat that she's kind of presenting herself as like this competent expert who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we find out that it's been like, what, 3 months of this. And
yes.
She has no idea what's wrong with her. Like, that's just such a Hen move. Like this kind of desperately clinging to the illusion of control over this.
Yes. And the secret keeping, I made a note about this right before we started. The secret keeping is also such a Hen move because I was thinking about Karen like ambushing her with the credit card state, which like, come on, Hen.
You didn't think your wife was going to
see the credit card bills? I guess I can hope that she was hoping Karen would see the credit card bills. I don't know. It's kind of funny because I'm sitting here like, this is a very duplicitous and not good life partner thing she's doing. But like the other half of me is like, is this amateur hour? Like open another credit card that's like secret.
She secretly wanted to get caught, maybe.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, like part of me is over here like, come on, Hen, be better at lying to your wife. Which is an insane thing to think, but it's just such like a rookie mistake.
I mean, it did take her 3 months still, so.
Yeah, so I guess we have to assume that Hen is usually the one that handles the finances. But yeah, this is like a pattern. Like, this is a scene we've seen multiple times of Karen, like, discovering something Hen has been keeping from her.
And confronting her about
it. And has to confront her about it. And it's like, you know.
I love so much that Karen knows exactly. Like, as soon as she finds out what's happening, she's like, oh, I know exactly what you're doing here. I know exactly why you're doing this. It's because you think that you can control this.
Yes.
You think you're the expert. You're diagnosing yourself, right? How's that going?
Yeah. So it's working, right? You've got a diagnosis. No.
Yeah.
No diagnosis.
And then she's just kind of really stalling for the rest of the episode until she actually collapses. I think she genuinely does intend to tell Chim after that confrontation with Karen.
Yeah. And I mean, and, you know, she like actually did go up to him to.
Right. Yeah. The world's worst timed bell.
Yes, of course. But, you know, also at that point, she should have been like, I can't go on this call.
Right. Yeah. It's so clearly she's kind of like, oh, well, this is going to be my one last call and then I'll definitely totally do it. And
yeah. Then, I mean, you know, there's definitely a part of her that. Can. There's definitely a part of her that's like, well, this is like a big emergency. They need me.
Yeah. And I mean, it's that kind of savior thing she's got that like, they can't do this without me. I have to be there. I have to be.
Yes. Her and Eddie are so similar in this regard.
Yes. Yeah. If only I am there.
Yes.
I can
they're
totally
shaking
handle
hands.
Everything.
You know, Predator handshake meme.
I mean, it's so like. On that, it's so funny that so many of the lines in this are reminiscent of the stuff people are saying to Eddie in season 8 when he's hiding the news about the job. And
yeah,
like some of those are like line for line the same thing because it's the same kind of instinct to
I've got
hide
this.
This and I've got it. I've got it under control.
Yes.
And you do not got it under control.
Don't got it under control. And I think that it's interesting to me, you know, now with the Buck addiction reveal to Chimney scene, and then now rewatching this scene with Hen, it's so interesting because they're almost identical, like except he's on the other end of the table. It's like flip-flopped, but it's Chimney. He's at the dining table. He's doing after action reports. He's not really paying attention at first at the table too.
Yeah. Like, I love that that's kind of a thing we get him doing, that he doesn't use the office. He's out there at the table because he doesn't want to be in Bobby's office, because he's kind of struggling to fill Bobby's shoes in his mind.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, and on top of that, I can imagine that that feels like a sacred space. Like,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, like have we gotten a scene of him in Bobby's office?
I don't think so.
I don't think we have.
Yeah, I'll have to see if it comes up, you know, during our rewatch, but I don't remember ever seeing him in there at all.
I don't think we've had one scene of him in Bobby's office. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. But yeah, so it's like blocking wise, it's identical to the Buck scene that comes later.
Right.
It's just mirrored because he's on the other end of the table. And then, but he's almost the same in it too, where he's just sort of being blasé and, like, you know, being very, like, sarcastic and jokey and, like, unintentionally saying the wrong thing.
Because
he doesn't know what they're approaching him with.
Yeah. So I made a note of that. I had forgotten that he says to Hen, "You'd handle it better because you're strong."
Yes. Like,
the worst possible line, you know.
Yeah. And, like, he doesn't know.
In retrospect. He doesn't know. Yeah. Like, to him, that's just Hen. Of course, he doesn't have to worry about her.
Yeah. I could just see the writers being like, teehee, this is so good. I'm doing so good at writing right now. Which they are. They are.
I'll give them that. That was great. That was,
you know,
that
was a little bit of dramatic irony happening here with the dialogue. But yeah, it's just a really good scene. And it's just, we've kind of talked about this in previous episodes, how those scenes are sort of like really linked to each other. And that what they're setting up seems to be Buck being able to observe what happens with Hen and take that on board and, like, learn from that and do it differently. And, like, obviously there's no way to know if Buck's side of things would have turned out the same, even if the stuff with Hen hadn't happened.
Right.
But
it's sort of an echo that they set up in the plot.
Yes. Well, and they're very clearly connecting the two, since they do set them up visually identically. Yeah. And I was like, oh, hey, you know, I was like Leo DiCaprio pointing, like, she even, like, approaches from the same side. It's just really interesting. I was like, oh, okay, they're doing something here. Or they were later, like, they were like, oh, hey, we have a chance to do this. Like,
yeah.
I don't think they had any inkling of the Buck plot when they were doing this Hen stuff. It's just later when they were doing the Buck stuff, they were like, oh, we can match this.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that Jim jinxes it. Like, the moment he said, it's quiet right now or whatever. Like,
yes.
Yeah, you did this.
Yeah. And then disaster strikes.
And that at the end of it, he's like, you know, I don't think you ever would have done this if it was Bobby. And he's right about that. But I don't think he's right about that in the way that he's thinking of it, like that he's failing to be a good leader in the way that Bobby would have been. I think it's like, obviously she's doing this because Bobby died, because this is a manifestation of her grief, really, and her need to feel like she's got control over something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, it would be interesting to see a universe where Bobby's still alive and she still gets this illness. Does she still, because I do think at first, like, she probably, like, still does it a little bit the same.
Oh yeah. Like, that's just her instinct, I think.
Yeah. She's like, I've got this. And it makes sense, because, like, you know, we've already seen with, like, the doctor being shitty to her mom and, like,
right. Yeah. You like, know, she's like, got, it she's doesn't got come like out of nowhere.
She's got, like, medical trauma,
right?
To where she's like, I'll do it myself because I can't trust doctors to do it correctly or whatever. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, If Bobby's alive, does she actually, like, you know, he's like, you wouldn't have done this if it was Bobby. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
She might have. But I think it's possible it would have played out differently. But that's not really because she doesn't respect Jim or trust him in the way she did Bobby. It's because this grief is kind of hanging over all of them, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, she says in the later episode, like, I didn't want anybody else, you know, I didn't want to hurt anybody further. Like,
right. And I mean, this is the same. It's kind of the same thing. It's this mysterious illness. She doesn't know what's wrong with her. She can't figure it out. And she doesn't want to scare them. She doesn't want to worry them. She wants to have it handled.
Yes. And like the way that she was with Karen when, like, Karen first does the reveal, or the gotcha, it's just so interesting to me because Hen spends this whole episode so deeply in denial about what she's doing and why she's doing it.
And how bad it is.
And how bad it is. Because, like, in her mind, like, the way she responds is, like, she's just got this, like, blasé attitude to Karen where she's like, babe, it's not a big deal. Like,
she's presenting herself as so reasonable. She's like, and while being wildly unreasonable, which I love.
Yeah, I love it.
It's such a Hen move.
But she really is. She's just like, she's like, it's fine. I just didn't tell you because I didn't know what it was yet. Like, and she's saying that like that's like a
like
a reasonable thing to say. And it's
right,
like,
right.
No, you sound insane right now. as soon as I figured out what it was, I was gonna tell you. God, you're being so unreasonable.
You're overreacting. Everyone's always just overreacting.
Yeah. And it's fantastic.
It's great. I love it.
She's a mess.
And I do like when she's like kind of listing off her symptoms to Karen. She notably doesn't say that she's like passing out randomly.
Yes, she completely missed the very scary part where she went unconscious and fell on the ground and stayed there for hours.
Yeah. She doesn't mention that one. And then it happens at a scene.
Yeah.
So yeah, great.
That was... And the rest of this episode is bananas.
The calls. These are two of the most unhinged calls. I love the Hollywood BDSM
that
we get in the first episode, in the first scene, rather.
Yeah. It was absolutely bananas. And everything that it leads to after that is also bananas.
Yeah, the chastity belt that is very clearly designed so they don't have to actually show the guy's junk.
Yes, absolutely. I love that he had, like, matching chainmail boxer briefs to, like, complete the, like, medieval look. Like,
and that they didn't clear the scene. They're like, here we are in a glass office.
Yes.
With his man's pants down, and we're not going to bother, like, removing any of his coworkers from this.
Yes. At no point are they like, okay, everybody get out of the room, which I guess turns out to be good, because if they had sent the lady out, then they wouldn't have known, like, any of what she brought to the scene. They're just in the, I don't, it was just so, like, I love Eddie's, like, you know, that's like how you're supposed to do it, but just the back of the palms, like, pat down, and then he's just like clunking, clink, clink, clink. The best part is Jim, like, I love when Chimney is like, that's his job as the captain, but it's also just like, I'm not doing that. So he's like, Eddie,
pat him down. This is a you problem. Poor Eddie. Poor Eddie in this, and then poor Eddie at the club.
Yes. Absolutely.
Hating his life so much.
But yeah, so they use this BDSM scene to then launch it goes so many directions. This plot that starts out with, like, they had the wherewithal and the absolute unmitigated gall to write a scene where Evan Buckley sits there in their glass-walled locker room and accuses Eddie of wearing a mental chastity belt.
Well, and is he wrong?
He's not wrong. He's never wrong about Eddie. He's got his number.
Yeah, and Eddie's not even really trying to deny it. He's like, can we just stop mocking me and my problems?
I mean, he's being very like, no. Like,
you know, it's like, no, you haven't looked at a woman in a year.
You're the one that's not me. It's because of my kid. And I mean, he does have some, like, I do think that he's being genuine when he brings.
No,
like,
he is.
He's, I mean, the thing about Eddie is, like, he has these, like, mental machinations that are both true and an excuse.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, like, the way he uses Chris. So, like,
oh, yeah.
Yes, I do believe him when he's like, last time I looked at a woman, I destroyed my relationship with my kid. And now I'm not doing that anymore. Like,
yes,
that's odd. But, like, that's the exact sort of, like, jumping to extremes that he, like,
always does.
He always does. Like, especially with Chris, where it's like, if anything, like, so, like, anything to do with Chris is like, it's, well, just,
I can never date again. I need to quit my job. I need to move to Texas.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
He has no sense of moderation here.
No, absolutely none. And, but then also, Buck is right. There's this, like, sense of, like, self-flagellation and, like, punishment and repression's not the word I'm looking for, but whatever. Like, self-denialism.
Self-denial, yeah.
Where he's like, well, I fucked up, so now I don't get to have that thing anymore.
Yeah, yes, yeah. That is exactly Eddie.
So
and then
he's,
Buck is just, like, not having it. He's like, yeah, we're going clubbing.
Yeah.
You're going to go meet strangers.
Yes.
You're going to like it. He does not like it.
Yeah. And I do think it's very interesting how much they emphasize the strangers part.
Yeah.
In this discussion. Yeah. I mean, you and I are both, like, staunch demi-romantic by Eddie as, like, our read on him in the series.
Yeah.
And I think this episode really strongly supports that thesis.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
He's the part that he seems very distressed about to me is he doesn't want to go meet strangers. It's, like, so taxing to him to, like, perform for strangers. Like, he doesn't. Yeah.
And, like, when they're there, he's like, I don't want to go bother her, because to him, he's like, nothing would be worse, right?
Yes. And
some
he doesn't
stranger.
Want people he doesn't want people coming up to him and hitting on him.
Right.
So
he's like, why would I do that to anyone else? That's awful.
Yes. And also, like, I think he just doesn't want to do it. So he's coming up with any excuse he can think of where he's, you know, and Buck, like, rightfully points out, he's like, this is a club.
That's what people are. Yeah.
She's here to
be bothered. And
of course,
Buck's, like, complete confidence that, of course, anyone is obviously into Eddie.
Yes.
It's so endearing.
It's so endearing. One, like,
it's like, frankly, look at this miserable man who doesn't want to be here. Everyone wants him.
Yes. I mean, he's not totally wrong.
He's not totally wrong. But
that guy is gorgeous. To the point where Ravi's like, why are you so bad at this?
Yeah. Eddie pouting in the club is just, like,
yes, I love Stick in the Mud Eddie. I love Stick in the Mud Eddie. Whenever he shows up, I'm like, yay.
And then Buck accidentally dating
yes,
the couple.
That
the
was
ethical,
something
the unethical non-monogamous couple.
Yes, absolutely. That was something I loved about this episode the first time around and loved again this time around. The return of ultra sexy can't help but pull Buck from in season one, really. He just, and, you know, there was, like, a period in there where they were kind of ragging on him, the writers were, where, you know, it's just like, oh, he's so bad at dating or whatever. And I'm like, where did my sexy, confident, accidentally having sex with women. Buck go. And here he is. Here he is accidentally pulling people of all genders.
I do think that him figuring out his sexuality did kind of throw him for a loop when it comes to dating. And when it comes to, like, yeah. He's kind of, how do I do this now? And this is kind of like, wait, I do know how to do this. I can do this. This isn't actually even that hard, other than
yes.
The fact that they were, you know, lying to him.
Yeah. And I do think it just was like, you know, he had to sit with it for a while and just kind of like get comfy with it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, like there was definitely some elements in like the past seasons of like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And it was like whole new genders on the table that I wasn't thinking about before. But yeah, oh, he looked so good. It was insane. They all three of them looked great. But yeah, it's God, that freaking couple.
Would have been nice if they could have hired a guy who was willing to actually kiss him on screen, though.
Yeah, or act at all, or like look. That guy sucked. That guy sucked so much. He was giving nothing.
I mean, Oliver can sell chemistry with a brick wall, but unfortunately that is kind of what he was working with there.
Yeah, that is what was happening there. He was acting against a brick wall. Like, but, yeah. And then I loved the following scene in the gym where they're like, Eddie and Robbie doing the Instagram investigation.
The investigation. Eddie is so invested.
He's so invested. Eddie wants to have a bisexual threesome with his best friend Buck so badly. And he does not know
that. If nothing else, he really wants to hear all about it in
detail. He really wants to. Yes, he wants to hear about it a lot. I noticed, I thought it was very amusing. They were very careful when Eddie and Robbie were looking at the Instagram to insert in the dialogue that Eddie goes over and gets her Instagram info and pulls up her Instagram info to look at her Instagram info. And then Robbie pulls up his Instagram info and Robbie's the one looking at the guy's Insta, and Eddie has taken over looking at the woman's Insta because he's straight.
But is he, though?
But is he? Because he's really excited about the idea that Buck maybe slept with both of these people.
Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Ann.
Yes. Yeah. Robbie, don't bring Andy into this.
I mean, it's so funny how absolutely shady they were about it.
They were so weird.
And they're like, oh, it's so hard to find a good third. Like, man, I wonder why.
Yeah, why?
What are you going about it?
It's so hard to find a good third. They keep not wanting to hang out with us after we reveal we've been emotionally manipulating them. That we've been duplicitously
job interviewing them.
Yeah.
Unicorn interviews. I mean, she calls him a unicorn. Like,
yeah.
That's not a positive, man. That's not a good way to talk about somebody you're trying to get with.
I mean, and even if it wasn't, it's like, be upfront. What are you doing?
Yeah, I did appreciate Buck kind of calling them out and being like, yeah, that was actually not super ethical toward me.
Thank you. I loved it. I felt that was like so heroic. Was like, yes, drag them. Like, this, they're being really shitty. Like, I mean, I could even allow it if, like, they both do the date separately. And but then afterwards, they're like, hey.
So, yeah.
We're married and we both had a great time with you. What do you think?
Right. But they didn't until after he, like, how long were they planning on stringing him along here?
Yeah, for real. Like, it was bizarre. I also love just like how, I mean, it's to set up the like miscommunication, like wrong assumptions thing where they're like, oh my God, they're siblings. But like, yeah. They're a husband and wife Instagram, like they would be all over each other's Instagrams. Like Eddie and Ravi had you to scroll think. For a long time to find the like. I love that also the the Eiffel Tower photo or whatever it was. They're both just like standing next to each other, like with like 6 inches between them, so that it's like plausible that they're siblings instead of spouses. And it's like, what spouse Insta selfie in front of the Eiffel Tower looks like that? They're like, they'd be like embracing at the very least.
You would think, yeah.
But yeah, this episode is wall to wall awesome. I love this episode.
Yeah. Oh, and the worst first date call where she's like having a cryptic pregnancy.
Yes, that. Like, barring someone I love dying tragically in front of me, that is, like, the worst nightmare I can think of as, like, medical emergency where, like, suddenly I'm birthing a baby I did not know existed. That is, like, the worst thing I can think
That's
of.
That's terrifying, right?
And, of course, the show is, really like, it's a miracle.
She was extremely chill about it, all things considered.
Like, yeah. Yeah, she was handling it like a boss. But yeah, and then the show is obviously like, but they're both so happy and like magically thrilled about it. They're going to get married and raise this surprise baby. And it's like, you're being a little Stepford again, 911.
But we do have that great moment where Hen's hands are shaking and she has to hand it off to Eddie. And he's kind of like, wait, what? What? I'm doing this? I'm not doing this. You do this. And she's like, nope, that's you.
Which is deeply unfortunate, because considering the list of people available to shove their hands up inside your vagina to turn a baby around, Eddie and Buck are last on that list with their giant man paws. Like, if I was that chick, I'd be like, get anybody with the smallest hands right now. Like, that is not the guy. Get somebody else. it's an emergency, so he can't really argue, but he's like, are you serious? I've never done this before. And she's like, well, today's your first day. Like, but he like can't really like keep arguing the point,
because there's this woman
suffering right now, but it's like
but he really wants to,
and he's not wrong, but also he can't be like no.
yeah
it's just that scene is it's just so it's horrifying. Absolutely horrifying.
It's also the emergency TV show childbirth, where it always happens in like 3 minutes from the first contraction, and then 5 minutes later the baby's coming
out. This is like, her first pregnancy, so it's like
right. And that would take a while.
Yeah, those are usually slower than, you know, subsequent pregnancies. I don't know, now I'm flashing back to the yoga birth scene from season 1. I love the lady who's like, I'm a doula and this is my 6th kid. Go somewhere. Scram. Go help one of the other women. I'm a pro at this. I can birth babies in my sleep.
But like, I do kind of love the thing this episode does that 911 so often does, which is kind of juxtapose these fairly lighthearted plots like the Buck with the couple and the club scenes, and then these kind of, especially the first one, kind of silly emergencies with this kind of growing dread of what's going wrong with Hen and her sort of grappling with it, and then it all falling apart at the very end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say, this episode, and it does really feel like in season 9, they've like tried to come back to their roots where you know, there's a theme to the episode and everything is sort of pertaining to that. But this one's really strong in that regard. They're, you know, like the episode's called Secrets and everything's about a secret. Like it, you know, and then, you know, the Buck date plot is only revealed at the end what the secret is, and it's they're keeping a secret from him.
Right.
But yeah, they really nailed it. They really stuck the landing on the theme for this episode, and I enjoyed it.
And closing it out with Jim actually firing her, which was
that scene
such a moment.
So good.
It's so good.
I love
agonizing.
But yeah, so I love any emotional scene between those two because they're both so good. And, you know, it's kind of it's a rarity in the show because, you know, they're like ride or die besties.
It's so rare for them to be in real conflict at all. And I think Hen kind of doesn't realize that they're in conflict at first. She's like, oh, well, he's here. He's worried about me. And it's like.
And he is.
He is worried about her, but he's also like, this is a real problem and we are not okay.
Yeah. We're not okay and you're not okay. And
you are in big trouble.
Yeah. Even then, she's still a little bit in denial.
She is, yeah.
About how bad it is. Like, and then I love that she basically kind of like forces him to fire her almost.
She goads him a little. Like it's almost daring him to do it. Like I don't know that she expected him to actually do it.
Yeah.
She's kind of like, well, are you gonna really?
And yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't yeah. You're giving me special treatment and he's like, you're right, I shouldn't do that. You're fired. Yeah. You know, and it's just so it's devastating. It's really, really good. They're both powerhouses. I always love their performances together like this.
Yeah. And like you said, they're so rarely at odds. They're always like ride or die. That's their thing.
Yeah. Well, and like
they always have each other's backs.
Yeah. And even in this, like, you know, like Jim's hand is kind of forced here.
Right.
Like he probably would have been forced to fire her eventually anyway.
Right, yeah.
By the brass, because, like, yeah, he cannot be playing favorites, you know, when she's, like, violated whatever regs, you know, like, safety protocols, etc. Like, but I totally lost my train of thought. But, like, regardless, like, he's still her best friend.
Right.
Like, there's no world where he wouldn't, like, keep showing up for her personally.
Yeah.
But
it's I kind of love that we're sort of forcing him into this conflict between being her best friend and being her captain. And he can't just uncomplicatedly be on her side the way he would have been able to if Bobby was still captain and Bobby had benched her. And then Tim could have gone like, oh, well, that sucks. And I'm on your side and I don't have to be responsible for any of it. But now he's the one who has to make that call.
Yeah, totally.
And it does fuck up their friendship. Like, she's really mad at him about it, as we'll see in the next episode.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. She's really, really mad. Oh, speaking of, I forgot, there's a really great scene with Hen and Athena.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say, I love that scene.
Yeah, where, yeah, it's more of Hen being, like, you know, in denial and, like, she's pretty clearly expecting Athena to kind of understand her and like be on her side. And Athena like is like, I get why you did it because I'm a similar flavor of control freak. But
right. I mean,
I'm
like,
also really mad at you.
I'm really mad and I'm really worried. Yeah. And like, really, she almost is more upfront with Athena than she is with Karen. Like,
yes.
About why she's doing this and what she's so afraid of. And
I think part of that is just because now Karen already knows.
Right. Yeah. That's the wheels are in motion. She knows this is going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
And Karen was not bluffing about telling Jim, which, you know, she eventually does.
Yes. And, you know, I do think it's like, you know, she was like, the longer it went on, the harder it was to say something, which is such a vibe for basically anything. So I get it. But yeah, like once Karen knows, then it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll go talk to Athena about it. And it's easier because she's already talked about it with Karen a little. Like,
right.
And I do think that if the bell hadn't rung, she would have been able to get it out to Jim.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of the tragic irony of it is, like, it's when she finally is ready to come to him and talk to him about it, then it's undercut at the last minute.
Yeah. But then, yeah, she does make the poor choice to go be in the fire call.
Yeah.
Which she could have been like, no, I have to be man behind and we'll talk about it after, you know.
Right, yeah.
And he would have been like, oh, no. But not had a choice. Like, you know, you got to go put the fire out. But like, right. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed this whole hen plot the first time around. And I'm eating it up again the second time around. It's really good food.
It's so good. So good.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that's all I had to say about it. And then next week we have episode 8, I guess, Run to Be War.
Yes, which I've got some perhaps hot takes about war that I've been sitting on. I mean, maybe they're ice cold. I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll find out. Tune in next week.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes real quick. See if there's anything that we. Oh, this was one thing with them at the club. I love, and Oliver does this consistently, but I love his body language when he's approaching people as like a sexual or romantic advance, but it's like really safe.
Yeah, he's very good at kind of not being intimidating or imposing about it.
Yes. I love when he like approaches her and is like trying to tell her his name and then sort of like reaches in to like get closer to her ear. But it's like, you know, he's still not like actually touching her or like being imposing in any way. It's just really good. Like, I love the way that he does Buck's body language in moments like this. I always really like it. It feels really true to the character and also really like part of the explanation of like what is so appealing about Buck to these people that he like it interacts with in this sort of relationship, where it's like he's like really not intimidating, like you said. Like, it's like very respectful of their bodily autonomy, I guess, or their like personal space. I think that's it. I think that was like the only thing. Okay, there's episode 4, I think.
Episode 4 for us of episode 7 of 9-1-1.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for listening. And I don't know, whatever. We're on Tumblr if you want to find us there. Although I'm pretty sure all the only people listening to us already follow us on Tumblr, so... So hello.
Hello. Find us on Tumblr. We're still there.
Yeah. Okay.